Beautiful. Thank you. We religious people can sometimes get caught up in a lot of doingness and rules and regulations, and this little joke is about that. A sinner dies and goes to hell and finds himself being escorted by the devil along a dark corridor leading to a series of dungeons. As they pass the first dungeon, he peeks inside and sees thousands of people being whipped repeatedly and screaming in horrible agony. "Who are they?" he asks the devil. "Those are Catholics who ate meat on Fridays," the devil explains. They pass a second dungeon where the sinner sees thousands of shrieking people being stretched on racks. "Who are they?" the new arrival asks. "Those are the Jews and Muslims who ate pork," the devil replies. They come to a third dungeon where people are being boiled in oil and screaming even more horribly than the inmates of the first two dungeons. "Who are they?" the sinner asks. "Those," the devil says, "are the Anglicans who ate their entree with their salad fork." I can say that because I'm an old Anglican. And my father and mother were very particular about etiquette at the dining table. You wouldn't know it to see me eat now, but... For the last 7 weeks, we have been reflecting on Deepak Chopra's book, How to Know God. And as people who seek to know God and to understand the meaning of our human experience, to know what it is as spiritual beings to have a human experience, I think it's important that we can explore different levels and stages of that knowing. Dr. Chopra's book gives us a framework for helping us to articulate what we mean when we use the word God. For we all have different understandings of that word and on the nature of the holy. So these last 6 weeks, we have reflected on the six levels or stages of understanding God presented by Dr. Chopra. Stage one, God the Protector. Stage two, we explored God the Almighty, the Powerful. Stage three, we contemplated the God of Peace. Stage four, we looked at God the Redeemer, the one who heals and loves. Stage five, we explored God the Creator, the one who helps us to explore our unlimited potential. And stage six, last week, we celebrated the God of Miracles. And now we come to the final stage, stage seven, of pure being, I am. At this stage of all our strivings, to know God finally culminates in this wonderful experience of learning not to necessarily understand or comprehend God, but to simply just be in God. In our scriptures this morning, we discover this God of pure being, I am. Prior to Moses' encounter with the great I am in the burning bush, we can presume that somewhere along his life journey, after he'd floated down the river as a child, we're told, in a basket, and been nursed by his mother secretly in the Egyptian court because he was found by the Egyptian princess, the Pharaoh's daughter, with the companionship, perhaps unknown to him, of his sister Miriam. He's being raised in the Egyptian palace, learning all sorts about Egyptian ways, probably thinking that he himself is an Egyptian, and learning all of the Egyptian gods and goddesses, Ra, the sun god, Amon, the goddess Isis, being raised with all those gods, only to discover that he is not an Egyptian at all, but the son of a Hebrew slave. And he looks out the window at the Hebrews building the great pyramids, building the great palaces of the Egyptian people and the pharaohs. And he becomes angry when he sees an Egyptian taskmaster beating a Hebrew slave, and he loses it. And out of that act of injustice, murders the Egyptian taskmaster. And so he flees to the hills to escape, knowing that he can't go back. And then we come to that moment. And then he marries Zipporah, who he meets at a well. And she is the daughter of Jethro, a Midianite priest who follows Baal, yet another god. And then we come to our story, where he sees, as he's tending his father-in-law's flock of sheep, he sees a bush burning. And strangely, the leaves are not burnt up in this burning. And so he stops and he notices. And he goes over out of deep curiosity to investigate this strange happening. And as the scripture says, because he stopped to notice, the angel of God spoke to him from the burning bush and said, "Heard the cry, just like you, of the Hebrew people. And I want to alleviate their suffering. So I need you to go back to your people and liberate them from Egypt. And I will bring them out of that slavery into the promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey and filled with many other peoples, the Jebusites and the Hivites, all sorts of people with different gods too." And so Moses said, "Well, among all these other gods, who is this who's speaking to me? Who are you? What's your name?" And God says, "I am who I am." And because in the Hebrew, Heya in Hebrew has both present and future tense, I am who I am, I will be who I will be. Tell them, I am. Sent you to liberate them. Now, I don't know about you, but I think God's being a little cagey, not really adhering to any label, no limitations, no adjectives even to describe this God. Just, I am who I am. This sounds to me like a very liberated God that is calling Moses to liberate his people. This story reminds us there is no greater freedom or joy than just to be allowed to just be. I am. This is a God without label or definition or box. This God just is. It's the isness of God. And this God who just is asking Moses to help his enslaved people to have the joy of just being also. As Chopra reminds us, is no more wonderful a state of being than just simply being allowed to be oneself. Isn't that true? Isn't it wonderful to be with those people who just allow you to be who you are? Who has that been for you? Someone who's just allowed you to be yourself. Ask no more of you than that. Similarly, in the words we heard from Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is reminding his students that a human's worth is not dependent upon their striving or their toiling or their working, but that God values us intrinsically for just our pure being, that our beauty and wonder as humans is as glorious as the lilies of the field. A lily doesn't work hard at being a lily. It doesn't analyze how to be a lily. It grows into a lily. Like Jean Vanier, who wrote a wonderful little book called Becoming Human. That's what we're growing into a full and mature human. When we come to experience the God of stage 7, we experience ourselves as ourselves. We too are without effort or label or definition, and we simply are at home in ourselves, where we are also then at home in the God of pure being, the one who makes no demands upon us, holds no expectations other than to be free to be. That is the Hebrew word for salvation. Open spaces to develop without hindrance. That is what it means, my friends, to be saved. And so, says Chopra, in stage 7, we encounter a God who is unborn, who has always been, undying, who is eternal, who is unchanging, has always been and will be who God will be, who is unmoving, who will always be, unmanifest, is not physical, immeasurable, cannot be quantified, invisible, cannot be seen, intangible, cannot be touched physically, only sensed intuitively, infinite, is beyond the beyond. As Chopra says, this in essence is an empty void. But this empty void we call God contains the potential for all life and all experience. This vastless, infinite void is the source of all that is. In seminary, I took a wonderful course by the Jesuits on prayer and spirituality, and we read several articles on God as nothingness. That is, when we dare to step into the nothingness of God, that the palpable something becomes known. There was a wonderful little book written anonymously that we also studied called The Cloud of Unknowing. Because we cannot truly know completely the great unknown, we can only experience the presence of it. Perhaps that is why near the end of our aging and living, so much of our life is stripped away from us. Beloved relationships, our health, our bodies are no longer recognizable when we look in the mirror. Like the rabbit, the velveteen rabbit, our eyes and our ears are rubbed off and falling out. Our most authentic selves is all that's left. Our souls left naked. And if we look deeply, it's so beautiful. And it's okay. Because we find ourselves in the bliss of just being. No more striving, no more pretending, no more trying, no more doing. Simply learning to just be who we are. Toothless and all. Deepak Chopra explains level 7 using these words. Up. The final one at the bottom. Stage 7, the God of pure being. I am. That is who God is. What kind of world did God create? A transcendent world. Not only this immanent physical world, but universe upon universe that is invisible and cannot be seen. Who am I? We're the source. How do I fit in? How do I find God? By transcending the material and looking into the material. What is the nature of good and evil? Good is the union of all opposites. That's all there is. Evil no longer exists. As Origen said, in the ultimate end, even Satan, our personification of pure evil, is swallowed up in the overwhelming goodness of God. What is my life challenge? To be myself. What is my biggest hurdle? Our belief in duality, that this is good and bad. I am cruel. I am kind. I am generous. I am selfish. All the labels of ourselves fall away, and we just are. We're all of it. We're beautiful and we're ugly. We're kind and we're cruel. We're generous and we're selfish. There's no more. We just are. What is my greatest temptation? We're no longer tempted by anything. We live beyond temptation. It's Jesus in the wilderness. He's no longer tempted by anything. He just is. What is my greatest strength? Unity. Union with the source. Union with ourselves. Union with one another. Wholeness. Integration. I had a dear friend, a Buddhist priest and professor of Eastern Studies at the University of Calgary, Dr. Leslie Kawamura, whose family was from Japan, and he had the oppressive and humbling experience of being placed in Japanese internment camps after Pearl Harbor throughout World War II. A beautiful, beautiful soul, and a blissful soul, always laughing, not taking life seriously at all. And he said to me, before he died, "You know, Jennifer, I died last year. I had a heart attack." I said, "What was it like?" He said, "It was wonderful." I said, "Why?" He said, "I experienced the bliss of pure nothingness." To know God at this level is to enter into the realm of the mystics and the saints and the souls, our loved ones, who rest in the infinite, who play in the infinite, who just are in the infinite, the source of all life, to finally be able to just be, and that is all that is needful. I believe it was when I was reading the mystic Simone Weil's book, Waiting on God, and learning about all of her striving to connect with God, when she realized that it was God who was reaching out to connect with her. And then I realized as I was reading this that God was not beyond my reach or unattainable, but became awake to the fact that I simply needed to let go and to sink into the presence of the God who is already present. That God is the palpable presence of pure being, calling me to simply sink into that presence. As the mystic Catherine of Siena expressed it, the soul is in God and God in the soul, just as the fish is in the sea and the sea in the fish. And Jesus put it this way, "I am in God and God is in me." As a good Jew, Jesus never claimed to be God, to be the source. But he experienced complete unity with God, oneness with God, completeness or wholeness with God. I am in God, and God is in me. And that is possible for all of us when we just stop to be. This is to know God at level 7. How did Jesus come to know this God? How does anyone come to know the depth of this relationship with the source of all that is? Through his struggles, through his letting go, through his times alone, through his prayers. One of the ways that we can practice this deep level of knowing that God of pure being is through connecting, through contemplation. And I've asked Bill Laurie, who spent many years doing contemplative study and prayer, to come and help us practice.
The amazing thing about what Jennifer's been sharing with us is that it might sound difficult. Does it? Maybe a little scary? No? Oh, good. The one thing that is true of all of those qualities of God that we need to add is that God is accessible to us. But we do that by making ourselves accessible to God. That's all we need to do. And we have some very good tools for doing that. And that's what I'm here to tell you about. There's a lot that could be said, and I've learned in my life that less is more, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it. I'll say something at the end about that. We might want to follow up with a workshop in this. But we're going to practice what is called pure prayer. So the God of I Am, pure being, the type of prayer we're going to try this morning is called pure prayer. The most common name for it in this century is centering prayer. You may have also heard of Christian meditation. It's a slightly different technique using a mantra, but it also is pure prayer. And it's pure not because it's better than, because if you think of something like say pure sugar, you think, oh, that's better than impure sugar, right? That's not even close to the meaning of what we come with pure prayer. Pure is not pure as opposed to impure, that which is bad, because that's again a dualism or a hierarchical ranking. But pure in this sense means essence. It's the purest form. It's the essence of prayer. So let me just check to see if other people have a practice of centering prayer or Christian meditation. Just a little nod or whatever. Okay, a few people. Yeah, great. Good. There are several texts in Scripture that help guide us in this type of prayer. The first one comes from Psalm 46, which is this phrase, "Be still and know that I am God." Sounds simple? How successful are you at being still? Something up here gets racing, doesn't it? Yeah. Another Psalm, 131, puts it this way and uses the image of waking up and staying awake. Jesus spoke a lot about waking up. He wanted to kind of give us a bit of a wake-up call. But instead of being asleep to God, we are awake to God, is the image. Psalm 131. Lord, I have little or nothing. I am no one and bring nothing to you at all. I am only a simple human being who understand little of earth's great affairs. But I know this, that I must still my soul in quietness, and like a child who rests upon its mother's breast, await your presence in the silence, listening. And in this waiting silence, remain awake forever. The disciples asked Jesus, "Lord, teach us to pray." And he answered them with some very simple things. He taught us the Lord's Prayer. And he also said this, "When you pray, go to your inner room, close the door, and pray to your Father in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you." From earliest days in Christian practice, this inner room has always been understood as the heart, the spiritual faculty. So you go into your heart, shut the door. And because it's not about distractions, it's about focus. What is the biggest challenge to meditation, to meditating, do you think? Shutting our mind off, yeah, okay. Busy place, our thoughts, yeah. Any other things that become a distraction or barrier? Sorry? Noises, yeah. Sneezing, yeah. Anthony DeMello, who's a great teacher in India of pure prayer, would always have his teaching sessions in a room where outside noise could come in. And the students always complain because it was a distraction. And he says, that's exactly what we're here to do. Let's not get involved with those. So our thoughts, there are physical sensations. Sometimes you get a muscle cramp. Feelings happen. Memories come back. All of these are things that are a challenge. So there's two methods to use in dealing with these. We can focus our attention, so what we're lined up on, got our eyes on, so to speak, or we can focus our intention. And we're going to try both of those, just a taste this morning. And I'd caution you as we try this not to try to experience anything. Like I've often done that. Oh, I'm praying, I'm meditating, I've got to have a holy experience. Come on, God, give it. Nada. Nothing. It's not what this is about. This is about opening ourselves, being accessible to God, as Jennifer's talked about. So first we're going to do it with a chant. The words are very still. It's not going to be on the screen because your eyes are closed. But you have to focus because we're going to use the same words from Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. But we're going to shorten it each time we sing it. So, and many of you have heard Jennifer explain this before. We're going to chant it today. So the first line of the chant is, "Be still and know that I am God." The second line is, "Be still and know that I am." Be still and know. Be still. Be. So you got that? You're great. This is going to be good. I want you to give your attention to the sound and to the shape of the words and the shortening of the phrase. You need to remember where you're at in this. By the time we've done it the third time, you may be wondering, oh, what line are we on now? Only one rule, really, and that's you sing the whole chant on single note. So there's no melody. For the first time we do it through, I'm going to ask you all to sing the same note as me. After that, you can sing any note you want. It might be the same note, but there's no rules on that. This is about engaging your senses. This is about paying attention. It's about focus. Ignore and let go of all other thoughts. Things like, oh, this sounds nice. Or, oh, I think I'll sing a fourth above next time. No, just don't do that. I've done all those things and it just gets in the road. The second thing that we're going to do is the intention. So after we've done the chant, we'll be in silence. And in this, we're going to consent to God's presence and action within. This is the opening of the heart and the entering of the heart. We're consenting to God's presence and action in us. In the silence, I'd invite you to use a word from the chant whenever you have a thought, feeling, sensation, image, reflection, any of those things come up, simply use one of the words, and you can choose whichever word you want, and it doesn't have to be from the chant either. The commonly used words, well, that'll complicate it. No, I'm not going to give you too many options. Any word will do. Be still, I am, in anything that occurs to you. Centering prayer is a very simple process, but it's not always straightforward. There's four guidelines. First one we've already done. Choose a sacred word as a symbol of your intention to consent to God's presence and action within. The second one is what we're going to do mostly. So sitting comfortably and with eyes closed, settle briefly, and then silently introduce the sacred word as the symbol of your consent to God's presence and action within. So after we finish the chant, whatever the word is, just say it gently to yourself and to God that you're consenting to whatever happens next. And then, the third one, this is the work of the prayer. When engaged, not if, but when engaged with your thoughts, return ever so gently to the sacred word. So you'll have thoughts while we do this. You'll have body sensations, your feet might cramp, you might hear the sound, you might hear the air conditioning. Oh, there's air conditioning. Be. And just let the saying of the sacred word bring you back to the open heart. And then at the end of the prayer, this is the fourth part guideline, at the end of the prayer, remain in silence with eyes closed for a couple of minutes. That's what you do. Normally this is done in 20-minute or 30-minute intervals. We're not doing 20 minutes this morning. This is just a taste. At the end of the prayer time, I'll ring the bell three times, just as a gentle way for us to come back to the present moment. That's a lot of talking for some very simple doing. Do you think you're ready? Yeah? Ready to go? Okay. There's one note, and you know the phrase, right? What's the phrase? Be still. No. You got it. Okay. Closing our eyes, and on my note. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still.
Be still and Be still.
And we gently return, opening eyes when you are ready. So if you're interested in a workshop, a full workshop on introducing the introduction of centering prayer, I'm going to hang out over here after church, so grab a coffee or a tea and wander back. Also, if there's anything about the experience this morning you'd like to chat about, please come and we'll meet there. We're going to sing another chant, Surely God is in this place.